For me, it's more of a fundamental question of why have I chosen to be a servant? In Mark chapter 10, two of Jesus' disciples, James and John, are asking Jesus on the side to save a place for them when he comes into his kingdom. And he kind of takes a moment to correct them, and he says, look, I'm the Son of Man, and I have come not to be served, but to serve. So that's my main motivation, to be an example. If I call myself a Christian, I want to emulate Christ in all that I do. For me, it brings great joy to know that I'm an answer to prayer to somebody's need. My wife and I have been married for 46 years, and early on we decided that we were going to be involved in whatever church or ministry we happen to be a part of at the time. We've been here at ACC for 7 years now and gotten involved in many different ways of serving. And so it's just wonderful to know that you are an answer to prayer in somebody's life.
Serving for me in general just brings a lot of joy that the world can't provide. The things of this world just can't touch the depth of joy that can come from serving others. I know also for me during difficult times in my own life, it seemed like my burden was eased if I was serving others during that time. It takes a lot of effort and more work to make the choice to serve others when life is difficult for us. But it seems, my experience has been that the peace and the joy that comes from serving far outweighs the effort it takes to actually make the choice and the effort to serve. I also know, like, I've met so many amazing people through projects or through serving or through teams. And so many of those opportunities have just developed rich relationships where I've gleaned amazing wisdom, or I've gotten much needed encouragement, solved problems while we're painting walls or working with kids or something. And some of my deepest, most valuable relationships have grown or developed through service with other people in the church.
Wow, good words, JC and Lindsay. Appreciate that so much. I want to welcome those that are joining us over at our Westside campus. Good to be with you, as well as those that are joining us online. Thank you for that. And glad that you are all here today. And probably many of you have heard me say, at least once, if not more times, that a pastor's job is really twofold. First of all, it's a pastor's responsibility to comfort the afflicted, but it's also their job to sometimes afflict the comfortable. And I just want to warn you about that, because today we're going to be leaning a little bit more towards the latter one. So I want to start off by asking, how many of you have ever had the opportunity to go on a cruise ship? Have anybody taken a cruise here? All right, quite a few. How many of you would go again if you had the chance? I think I probably would too. How many would like to go for the first time on a cruise? Anybody? Yeah, there are probably some of those that are here as well. Well, there's another question. It has to kind of do with boats and shipping as well. Has anybody here, and I haven't seen maybe but just a couple of people, has anybody here ever sailed on a battleship? Anybody ever been on a battleship? Well, I think it probably should be obvious that someone's experience on a cruise ship compared to a battleship is going to be two very different experiences. On a cruise ship, there's a lot of people. They're just there. They're along for the ride. They're there to enjoy the amenities, and there's a whole crew that's there to wait on them. I've been on two cruises, and it's been amazing. I would go again. But on a battleship, it's going to be very much different than that. When you're on a battleship, you're only there for a purpose. You have a job to do, a responsibility to fulfill. Now, I'm sorry I can't even mention that, because some of you are probably on your phone right now looking for a cruise, because you had just brought it up, and you were going to check on that. But I say this to remind us that the church should ultimately resemble a battleship rather than a cruise ship. And honestly, that's exactly why for the next 3 weeks, we are gonna unashamedly ask each of you to find a place to serve somewhere in the church if you haven't already. And the good news is, so many of you are already serving there. We have about 55% of the people who call ACC their home that are serving, which makes this kind of a really unique series, in that this series is intended, the audience is intended for only about 45% of those who are listening, and that rarely happens. Now, for those of you who are already serving, you don't need to check out. If you found a place to serve, hopefully these messages will simply be a good reminder to you why you are actually, why you've chosen to serve. But if you're one of those who so far has just been checking things out here or simply enjoying the amenities, my prayer is that sometime during this series, you're going to have the experience of God tapping you on the shoulder and inviting you to step in and serve. And you notice we're calling this series Step In to Serve. And to step in means to literally to become involved, to involve oneself. And some of the different ways you could say step in would be to lend a hand, to chip in, or to take action. And to step in is to enter into some position, activity, or situation to intervene or improve it. And that's why every summer we intentionally make the opportunity to provide really just a clear on-ramp for those who call ACC their home to step in and find a place to serve. And the reason we do it right now in the middle of the summer is because many of our ministries are ramping up for the fall. They're going to be starting new programs and ministries. And so they're going to need people to serve, not to mention the fact that we're still in a bit of recovery from the effects of COVID, trying to get out of that. And while we encourage people literally to serve outside the walls of these church year round, for 3 weeks, we focus on taking care of this church family because it requires a lot of folks who are serving in order for this church to be healthy and to be able to function effectively. And initially, when you hear that, it might sound a little self-serving, but I like to think of it as a bit like the safety instructions you often receive when you're getting on an airplane and they talk about those oxygen masks coming down. What do they say? Put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you try to help other people. And so we want to get this place in the best care as possible. And the goal, I want you to know, is that we could get up to at least 75% of the people who call this their church home serving in some area. So we got some place to make up about 20%. And I've just got to say already to the hundreds of individuals who already volunteer and serve, I've just got to say thank you and thank you and thank you. We could not do church the way we do if it weren't for so many faithful and dedicated volunteers who have already stepped in. And if you haven't stepped in to serve yet, this is going to be a perfect opportunity for you to do it because we're attempting to make it as easy as possible. You might have noticed that when you walked in the foyer. Well, in this series, we're actually going to take a look at three things that I think can sometimes hinder us from being able to step in to serve. And one of those we'll look at today is when you don't feel qualified. Sometimes that'll keep you from stepping in. Or maybe when serving God kind of intimidates you, that'll keep you from stepping in. Or maybe when you're just too busy, and there's a lot of people here who have a lot on their schedules. Well, today, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about stepping in even when you don't feel qualified. Now, when I read through the Bible, you come across all these different people that are there. And as far as their examples, sometimes these individuals, I mean, set the bar pretty high. We just spent a few weeks studying through the book of Daniel and studying Daniel's life. And Daniel was kind of a guy like that to me. He set the bar pretty high. He did everything so well. And his example, honestly, can be a little bit intimidating to me. On the other hand, there are those people in the Bible who seem to kind of fumble one thing after another. And they're really the ones that give me hope because that's kind of how I feel like as I go through life. And today, we're going to actually see how Moses... And I realize someday I'm going to have to actually maybe talk to him when we get to heaven. He's one of the great Old Testament characters whom God uses in a significant way to actually free the Israelites from Egypt. But he wasn't always doing that in a very stellar way. And since I've been praying for some of you to clearly hear God's call to serve, I need to point out that Moses received an unmistakable call from God to serve him. If you have your Bibles or your tablet, we're going to be jumping into Exodus chapter 3. We'll be in chapter 3 and 4. It'll also be up on the screen. Here's what we read. Moses now was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he had led the flock around to the far side of the wilderness, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. He probably thought it's just going to be an average, normal day, but this day was going to be different than all the others because it says, there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames from a bush, from a fire from within a bush. And what was so interesting about this is Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. What a way to get Moses' attention. But it was all because God had a job for Moses to do. And when we read through there, after God went through some formalities, him getting his shoes off his feet, God revealed his plan to Moses. And here's what he said to Moses in chapter 3, verse 10. He says, "So now I want you to go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Now, when I think about what just happened, I think, wow, a burning bush that isn't consumed. God literally calling him by name and then clearly identifying himself and sufficiently intimidating Moses to the point that he thought he needed to hide his face, and then making it really, really clear about what Moses was being asked to do. You would think Moses would have just stepped up and said, "Hey, count me in." But that's not what happened. Instead, what we discover is that Moses began to make excuses as to why he couldn't serve. And I really appreciate what George Washington Carver had to say. He said, 99% of the failures come from people who are in a habit of making excuses. And isn't it true that if you really want something, you'll find a way? But if you don't, you'll often find an excuse. And that's exactly what happened with Moses. Moses presented the following excuses. And I've got to say that while I doubt that any of us here are going to be called to serve in a capacity as challenging as Moses was, we've maybe actually used some of these same excuses to excuse ourselves from serving. And so here's where Moses starts with what I would call the worthiness excuse. I'm not really worthy. Because after God calls him in verse 11, it says, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?'" And I think Moses kind of had to be thinking, "Hey, I'm just a nobody shepherd out here in the wilderness." Now, we already know that 40 years earlier, when Moses had been known as Pharaoh's son, and when he thought at that time that he was a somebody, he'd been ready and actually made a little bit of an attempt. But the problem was God wasn't ready yet. And now it's 4 decades and a wilderness later, and Moses no longer felt worthy. But as we're going to see in each one of these excuses, God patiently walks Moses through each of his excuses. And to this excuse, God says to Moses, "Hey, don't worry. I will be with you through this whole thing. My presence will provide your worthiness." Now, I say that because in my years of ministry in the church, I've found that sometimes that sense of unworthiness can happen for people in the church. We look around and we think about our situation, where we came from, or we think about our talents or our abilities, and then we stop when we look at other people's talents and abilities and their background, and we compare it to our own, and then we use that as an excuse to excuse ourselves. Like, who am I to really be able to serve? And I think that could have been one of the reasons why the Apostle Paul, when he was trying to give some early Christians in the city of Corinth a picture of what the church was to be all about, he literally used the analogy of a human body, where each part has a part because all parts are worthy. And here's what he said in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 15. He reminds you, he says, you know, if the foot should say, "Hey, because I'm not a hand, the hand's the one that really does all the work, I don't belong to the body," it would not for that reason stop being a part of the body. And so I want to ask you this morning, has worthiness, the worthiness excuse, been keeping you from stepping in to serve? Well, that one didn't work. And so we get to Moses' second excuse, which is what I would call the authority excuse. In other words, who died and put you in charge? Kind of like that. Because in Exodus 3:13, Moses said to God, "Well, suppose I go to the Israelites and I say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' And they ask, 'Well, what's his name?' Then what am I going to tell him?" He knew that when he went to bring this up, people were going to wonder where he got the authority to do this. And of course, we know God answered, "Hey, well, you can tell them, 'I am that I am.' This is what you're to say to the Israelites. 'I am has sent me to you.'" And I just want you to know, if you step in to serve, you really need to know where your authority to do this has come from, because other people are going to wonder. And it takes me back to the time when Jesus left this earth to go back to the Father and had given his disciples a huge responsibility. And if we read in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 and 19, it says, "Then Jesus came to them and he said, 'All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. So I have the authority. Therefore, I want you to go. I'm giving you the authority to go into all the world and interrupt people's lives in order to tell them about me.'" And so that's where our authority comes from. And so I would wonder today, has the authority excuse kept you from stepping in to serve? Well, Moses wasn't done with his excuses yet, because he kept getting answers. And the next one he would share would be what I would call the influence excuse. The influence excuse. "Nobody's going to listen to me," is basically what he was saying in Exodus chapter 4 right now, verse 1. Moses answered, "Well, what if they don't believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you,' how will I have any influence in their lives?" Well, if you remember at that particular point, God said to Moses, "Hey, Moses, what's that in your hand?" And he looked over, remember what he saw? It was his shepherd's staff. And he said, "Well, what should I do with that?" He said, "Throw it to the ground." Now, when he threw it to the ground, does anybody remember what happened? If you've read the story or you've ever seen the movie, The Ten Commandments, then you know that the staff turned into a serpent. And God said, "Grab it again." And it turned back into a staff. And when God did that, he was letting Moses know, "I'm going to give credibility to your message. I'm going to give you influence. There's nothing about that that you need to be concerned about." Now, I got to be honest. I've never had, and I don't know that I hope to have, a staff that can turn into a snake. But I have experienced God in amazing ways, because I know it doesn't come from me, actually giving me influence in the lives of people I would have never thought possible. And I want to just let you know, he will do the same for you if he calls you to serve. And so I would want to ask again today, has the influence excuse been keeping you from stepping in? Well, he's used three excuses, but he's still got a couple more up his sleeve. And so he gets to the fourth excuse, which is what I would call the ability excuse. And you can tell Moses recognizes that he's kind of stretching it with God, because in verse 10 of chapter 4, it says, Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant. I realize I'm pushing the envelope now. "Lord, I've just never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've been speaking to me. I am slow of speech and tongue." Now, what do you think God's going to do with that? Well, I love what Charles Spurgeon said. He said, "God doesn't need your strength. He has all of that in himself. What he needs is your weakness, your ability to acknowledge that. He has none of that." And the Lord kind of reminded him and said, hey, Moses, who gave human beings their mouths? Who helps them to be able to hear or to see or to even speak? He says, "I want you to go and I will help you speak and I will teach you what you need to say." See, what you and I have to recognize is that God intends to equip those that he calls. He'll be the ones that equips us. And I love what Hudson Taylor said. He was a great missionary in China for many years. He said, "All God's giants," and he's talking about giants of the faith, "have been weak people who did great things for God because they reckoned on God being with them." So I want to ask, has the ability excuse kept you from stepping in? Well, Moses, I think, has come up with about every excuse that he can think of, and God has an answer, which left him with no other option than his final excuse. And his final excuse is what I call the ability or the availability excuse. The availability excuse. Basically, you know what he says is, "I don't want to do it." The problem is Moses really just didn't want to step in. And so that's what he says in verse 13 of Exodus chapter 4. "But Moses said again, 'Pardon your servant, Lord. I just want you to send someone else.'" Moses is out of excuses, and basically he's telling God, "I don't want to do it. Please remove my name from your list of potential candidates. I'm not available at this time." And I appreciate what George Washington had to say about that. He said, "It's better to offer no excuse than a bad one." And that was a bad one. And honestly, that might be the place where you happen to find yourself. So let me just remind you, if you are, you can say no, like Moses attempted to, or you can try, if you wanted to run from God like Jonah did, but those really are not your best options. It didn't work well for Jonah, and it literally tested God's patience for Moses. If you read in the text, we're told at this point that God actually got kind of angry with Moses, but once again, worked with him and provided a solution through his brother Aaron. And so I've got to ask, has the availability excuse ever kept you from stepping in? Well, by now, I would hope that it would be obvious that we're never going to win through offering excuses to God, which is why Moses finally decided to quit. He ended up stepping in, and the rest is history. He did some amazing things because God used him to accomplish them. And what we see in the example of Moses and so many others in the Bible is something we've got to be aware of. And that is that God doesn't call you when you're ready. Wouldn't that be nice if he did it on your timetable? Hey, I got everything put in order. I'm ready to go. God calls you when he's ready. And we mentioned how when Moses was 40 years old, that was when he thought he should be doing this job. How old was he now? It was 40 years later. He was 80 years old. And it's just a reminder that we need to trust God's timing. If he's nudging you right now to step in, it might be doing so regardless of your age. And so the question I just want us to kind of contemplate this morning is this: are you resisting God's call to serve? Now, a lot of you, we already know, 55%, you've already stepped in to serve, but there's a number of you who maybe been waiting. Waiting for something amazing. Maybe you've been waiting for a burning bush experience. When you see the bush that doesn't burn, you're in, right? Well, let me just ask you, how many burning bushes experiences do we read about in the Bible? You know, there's just one. And there weren't any others, and so probably we're not going to see that one ever again. And yet, I already know, God is still calling each of you to serve. Now you might stop and say, no, Brian, actually, I don't think God's actually ever called me to serve. Well, if you read his word, you will find out that he had. He's made it very clear. In fact, through the Apostle Peter, when he was writing to some believers, in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10, said this: each one of you, and in the Greek, you know what that means? It means each one of you should use whatever gifts you have received to serve others. That's what it's about. As faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. And what I would want to remind all of us this morning of is this: if God provided Moses with what he needed to lead the Israelites out of Egypt, I think he's got you covered to serve in any area that he's called you to serve. But I just want to remind you this morning that if you haven't been serving, you are going to have to overcome a significant inertia created probably by some of your insecurities or your pride. And I say that because insecurity or pride creates inertia because it comes from within all of us a desire to avoid awkwardness. We don't like feeling awkward, or to fail. And anytime you haven't been doing anything and you decide to step in, it's going to feel a little bit awkward. And there is the potential that you might actually fail. It's going to require some risk. But I got to ask another question because this is fun. How many of you have ever had the opportunity to be on a zip line? I bet over half the people every service have been on a zip line. What's the hardest part about the zip line? It's that initial start, right? I mean, you're sitting there, they've double-checked your harness and everything three times. You've just watched five other people go down and they didn't die. They were all safe. But you got to actually step in. And once you actually do, what happens? You say, that was awesome. It was awesome. So let me just offer you a couple of suggestions for when you step in to serve. And the first suggestion I would have would be this: get out of your comfort zone. You have to do that, but I would encourage you to stay in your gifting zone. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone, but stay in your gifting zone. And so I'm saying that because you're going to see a lot of different places that you could serve in the church, and I just want to bring it up. If you don't enjoy engaging or interacting with other people on a personal level, please don't sign up to be one of our door greeters out here at the front door on Sunday morning, because that's not going to go very well. You won't feel very good, and neither will the people who are walking through the door. And you know what it's like when people step out of their comfort zone, but also out of their gifting zone. If you've ever watched some of the auditions on American Idol, and you hear the person who thinks they can sing, but they cannot sing, and it's just not good to get out of your gifting zone. And so the Bible actually says all of us have gifts that we've been given by God to serve. So in Romans chapter 12, verses 6 and 7, it says we have different gifts, which is why we have so many different places to serve. And so if your gift is serving, what should you do? You should serve. And if your gift is teaching, what should you do? You should teach. You should serve in your area of giftedness. And I've got to say, if you're here today and you're over 30 years old, my guess is that you have a pretty good idea what you're good at and what you're not, because you've tried a few things. Some worked and some didn't. If you're under 30, you still may be learning some of those things, and you'll have to do maybe just a little bit more experimenting. So I'd encourage you to do that. The second suggestion I would have would be this. Don't consider one failed attempt, effort as an adequate attempt. Because some people with a soul serving would say, hey, you know what, Brian, I tried that once, and it didn't work. And you need to try again. You're going to have to try again. Because you know what happened for Moses? When he finally said, okay, God, I've got this. I'll give it a try. Remember, he marched over to Egypt. He went into Pharaoh and said, Pharaoh, God says, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, wow, okay, Moses, I guess God's people are supposed to go so they can go, right? That's not what he said. In fact, Moses actually made it harder on the people. Pharaoh said, well, you guys have too much time on your hands, so we're going to double your workload. And Moses actually got in trouble with the people. Remember, he had to try again, he had to try again, he had to try again. So just don't consider one failed effort as an adequate attempt. If something, you try something and it doesn't work, try something else. I've got to share with you, one of my new favorite ice cream places is a place called Ice Cream. I love that name. And they've got a dozen or so amazing flavors of gelato. And I got to tell you, before I settle on any one of them to actually order it, you know what I do? I ask for a sample. Yeah. They give you a little spoonful and you can kind of taste it. And I actually get an idea of tasting it and experiencing it. And I would encourage you to do that in these areas of service. Try one. If it doesn't fit well, or if it doesn't taste that good or leaves a bad taste in your mouth, maybe move on to another place. Now, let me give you an idea this morning of just how many people we're hoping are going to step in and serve over the next few weeks. The good news is already at our Northside campus, we have about 520 people who are serving in some capacity in the church, which is amazing. But we still need right at about 304 more people to step in and serve. And I've got to say, if you have any interest at all in serving in children's ministry, they're at a really important part right now, because in the next month or two, when that children's ministry expansion opens up, Julie's going to need a lot of people to fill rooms and to help out with all the kids and the people that will be here. So plan on that. If you're over at the serving over at the west side, there's already 66 people that are serving, but there are still 28 more areas that we need to be able to fill. Now, if you're either at the north side or west side campus today, if you've noticed, we conveniently included in your insert today a list of really something for everybody to be able to find to serve. And if this doesn't help you out, all you need, there are tables out in the foyer at both locations. If you're joining us online, you can still have access to that. You go to academychristian.org and then find the My ACC page, and then you click on the Step In to Serve graphic. Now, at the Northside campus, if you fill these out, if you decide today you want to take a shot, you can drop them off either at the basket in the back or out at the Connection Center. If you're over at the Westside campus, Kevin will let you know where you need to drop those off. Now, one of our specific targets I already mentioned are those folks who are still just strictly consumers here, and you've not yet become a contributor. Now, make sure you hear this. Being a consumer is fine. We're all made for that. All of us need to consume. But we were also made to contribute as well, and we need to do both. And it's my desire to get you to step in to serve, not because you've been made to feel guilty, because that's not a very good motivation to serve, and it will show up in your service. I'd encourage you to step in because you sense God tapping you on the shoulder, and because you understand, as you heard from both JC and Lindsay, the value that it can bring to your life. And I just want to say, hey, fortunately, God doesn't have an entire nation that he needs to be led to a promised land that he would ask you to do. But he does have a church here that needs the gifts and talents and abilities of each one of you in order for us to be able to function most effectively. And I bet some of you are sitting there thinking, well, whatever I could do, it really wouldn't make much difference. They really don't need me. Yes, we do really need you. And the reason we need you is because of a statement I heard a long time ago that's never left my mind, which says every church is a unique combination of people and circumstances, never to be repeated. And what that reminds me of is that, folks, you're not here by accident. You're here on purpose. And part of your purpose, if this is your church family, is because there's nobody else that can do what you can do in the church. And so I hope there's going to be a bunch of people over the next few weeks who will decide to step in and serve. Let's pray. Father, thank you for showing us examples of the struggles that some people had, listening to your call, answering really your desire for them to serve, like Moses. Thank you for your patience with him. Thank you for your patience with us. Father, my prayer has been that through this series and in this time, that there would be a number of people who would sense your Spirit's prompting to step in and serve. Help them to really be able to hear that, to see it, to experience in a way that they know it's from you. It's not just some passing feeling, but it's a call on their life to serve you. And I pray that as we help people get connected in serving, that it would have an impact beyond this world and into eternity as we serve you and serve your kingdom through the church. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.